Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Well, sorry, Old MacDonald, you're not the only one with a farm. Prolific gardens are sprouting in the city as well. And that means fresh produce is closer to our tables and local food banks. I'm May Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Virginia Conversations. We're focusing on the efforts to increase the number of urban farm plots around the state. That's also the focus of the Virginia Urban Agriculture Summit. That's April 15th and 16th in Lynchburg. The summit will give members of the community and agriculture experts an opportunity to exchange ideas about boosting urban farming and providing increased access to more healthy and nutritious foods. Our two guests today are presenters at the Urban Agriculture Summit. Joining us from the studios of WVTF in Roanoke is Brett Cochran. He is the founder of LEAP for Local Food, Local Environment and Agriculture Program. That's what it stands for. And by phone from his office in Central Virginia is Michael Van Ness, a founder and executive director of Lynchburg Grows. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with you, Brent. If you could describe what the idea is behind LEAP. What happened when you leapt?
The idea behind LEAP is to develop, support, and maintain a sustainable local food system in the greater Roanoke region. And we want to do that for the purpose of bolstering our local economy by supporting local farmers and at the same time bolstering our community's health by making sure that we have healthy, nutritious food and that we can sustain that food even if things start going south on us as far as being able to access food from other parts of the country or other parts of the world.
I love this term, local farmers. Could you explain who fits into that category?
Well, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's kind of a distance thing. If you go into a grocery store, most of that produce is coming from California, or fruit or produce, and that's not very local to us. So it's really a distance. It starts in your backyard, and then we define it as within a 100-mile radius of where of Roanoke, basically. So anywhere within 100 miles of that, but obviously the closer you can get, the better.
Michael, talk to me a little bit about Lynchburg Grows, and how old is your organization?
Our organization was founded in the fall of 2003, and it grew very organically and actually due to a mistake. We came about in response to a Lynchburg News and Advance story involving a local man living at the Longwood Group home in Bedford, and Paul Lamb was an individual living with mental retardation and witnessed the destruction of his garden that he had lovingly cared for. And due to this miscommunication error, the love of his life was destroyed. So the founding members of Lynchburg Grows came together to help Paul, just help build a new garden for Paul. And during that process, from the fall through the early spring, we had so many supporters behind us, including folks like Delegate Putney, Delegate Klein, local businesses like Southern States. And they recognized how we were helping to change someone's life in a positive direction. And they challenged us. They said, look, you've demonstrated this. Why don't you all form a nonprofit that helps disabled and disadvantaged enjoy the healthy benefits of gardening and allowing them to have access to such spaces?
Do you see that this might become a franchise? This is Lynchburg Grows. Do you see this growing in other towns and cities?
any town that wants to take the name, we're more than happy. Actually, there is a Project Grows in Stanton, Virginia. There's a Lexington Rockbridge Grows. And so there are other organizations, even within the Commonwealth, that have been using us as a model, both our successes and our mistakes, because we feel that organizations can learn from both of them, especially our mistakes just as much as our successes.
Let's begin the conversation by talking about what urban farming really is. A lot of folks don't understand anything more than maybe the community garden that they might drive by on the way to downtown, say, Richmond. What is urban farming? I'm going to start with you, Brent.
Well, I think urban farming is a pretty simple definition. I mean, it's people that are growing fruit or produce or even raising, say, chickens for egg production within city limits. It's as simple as that. You know, I'd say in Roanoke, our most robust example of that is the Roanoke Community Garden Association, which has many community gardens throughout the city and is headed by a great individual, Mark Powell. And they're doing all types of urban growing and gardening, and they're looking at putting in an orchard. We also have Lick Run, a community farm and market. That's in the city. And then the Roanoke Natural Foods Co-op has an urban farm here that's actually technically within the city limits. So I think that's how I would define it. I'd be interested to hear what Michael has to say about it.
Yeah, I guess I would just kind of resort to kind of the most common definition that I'm familiar with is just urban agriculture is the growing, as Brent said, the growing, processing and distribution of food crops and animal products by and for the local community and within an urban environment. So it sounds like we both have pretty much the same definition.
As I mentioned earlier, there's a summit coming up. That's in Lynchburg, April 15th and 16th, the Urban Agriculture Summit. That might be a first opportunity for you. But for right now, let's roll up our sleeves. I want to pretend that I have just come to you, Brent, and I've come to you, Michael, and I've said, I am really interested in this. What tools do I need? How do I get started? I've never considered taking my spit of land and turning it perhaps into more than just a tomato garden. I want to do more with it. What would you tell me? What kinds of tools would I need to get started?
You want to tackle that, Michael, or you want me to jump in?
You can start.
Let's start with a person who's not going to charge me a fee. How's that?
Yeah, well, you know, I would say
no consulting fees here.
No consulting fees. Yeah, so, you know, I would say the first decision is how much land do you have and what are you growing for? Are you growing it to just share with your neighbors? Are you really growing it? Are you growing it just for yourself and your family? Are you growing it to actually as, you know, professional production, meaning you want to grow this stuff and try and sell it to restaurants or set up at a farmer's market or some sort of outlet, some sort of retail outlet? So that would be the first question. And that the second question is, you know, how much land do you have? You can produce quite a bit of especially produce and herbs on a small plot of land. And so it's making those decisions about how much land you have and what you want to do. The second thing is you're going to have to know a little bit about gardening. And it just depends on where you are. There are going to be great resources in every community. You always have the Virginia Cooperative Extension, the Master Growers Program. You know, in our in Roanoke, I can speak to this community. Once again, the Roanoke Community Garden Association really does a great job with educating their folks. So that would be a great organization to get involved with, because first thing, unless you have a green thumb, you need to figure out how to get one, and that is a sort of a lifelong learning process. So that would be, you know, if you're already a step ahead of the game and you say you grow really nice tomatoes, or there's something you've been a backyard gardener for a long time and you've got the growing part figured out, then the next step is sort of scaling up if you wanted to actually sell within the to your community. And you know, that's really a tricky part, because then you're starting to get into the economics of small-scale farming. And there are some things, once again, locally in Roanoke that I know of, some classes that take place every year where people can find out more about that. There's a Growers Academy that the Catawba Sustainability Center puts on every winter. And there's some other resources like that. But that's the tricky part, going from growing a few tomatoes in your backyard to actually growing tomatoes in a quantity to sell is a whole different ballgame.
Michael, anything to add?
Yes, that was a great job, Brent. I would just add that here at Lynchburg Grows, we offer people a chance to develop a green thumb because our whole approach is hands in the dirt. So we welcome volunteers from the community to come work alongside our disabled employees and actually learn firsthand, you know, how to grow these vegetables. One thing I would mention that we also talk about when landowners are expressing interest is how old is their house and how close to your house are you going to grow. Lynchburg is an older city, and any house built before 1970 used lead paint. And lead can be incredibly toxic and even cause a permanent brain damage to infants if they ingest even the size of a pencil tip. so we really urge people that live in the city to do soil testing, which they can get from their local Virginia Cooperative Extension office. They send it to Virginia Tech, and they can find out their lead levels. We recommend that people use raised beds. Instead of growing in your dirt and not, don't worry about the lead, but go ahead and amend or just build a raised bed. Put down geotextile fabric. In previous years, we've sold a lot of compost so that folks can make their own raised beds using high-quality compost that they know it does not have chemicals in it. We've learned this from a lot of experience because this property, being next to what was one of the country's largest sign companies, we were concerned that the soil would be heavily contaminated and that the groundwater would be especially contaminated. What we found out after $280,000 in environmental site analysis, site assessment, is that the farm itself, the soil that they were growing the roses in, was more contaminated than the country's one of the largest sign companies.
Wow.
So it really was eye-opening to me with my environmental law and environmental science background to see that 50 years of what people thought was benign use and normal commercial use was actually contaminating the soil horribly.
I love that you mentioned the Virginia Cooperative Extension because I think it's one of the most underutilized resources available. People can find out about local extension agents in your area by going online to ext.vt.ed. What we do is place these and other websites on our website at virginiapublicradio.org. So when we give you a number or we give you a website on this show, just go ahead and check that out online. But that's a great resource. Spencer from Virginia Beach, good morning.
Hi, yes. I have two questions. I'll keep them fairly brief. I'm from the Hampton Roads area. And there is definitely no shortage of land down here, and yet we don't have many urban farming initiatives. And for someone who is, say, not a landowner, how would the community go about starting a urban farming initiative if they don't necessarily have the access to land? And also, what sort of resources would they need, both in terms of, say, human capital and the physical resources needed for this? And also, there's also, you know, this area is partially rural. We have a lot of farms in the Hampton Roads area and from North Carolina that we have in the farmers markets around here. But I think often it's seen as sort of a luxury if you're able to shop in those places or become a member of a co-op. It's not something that most people do. So how would you go about starting this farming initiative without sort of upsetting what we already have in terms of local farmers and disrupting their prices and the way that they do business?
Let's start backwards. What about the concern that one might be stepping on the toes of other farmers, farmers?
We haven't found that here in Lynchburg. We started up, as Spencer was saying, a community-supported agriculture program. It actually starts next week for folks that want to sign up for 26 weeks. It's $15 a week, and they are assured to get their week supply for their family of fresh fruits and vegetables throughout the summer. What we did early on was we realized even though we have the largest greenhouse property and the oldest greenhouses in the state, we said, let's reach out and work with local farmers. Let's start developing a farmers network because with 75,000 people living in the city, we can't possibly grow enough. So we have local farmers growing incredible produce out in the surrounding areas. They sell it to us. They sell it to us at wholesale cost. We add 30% to the price, and we give it to our customers. So instead of farmers getting the typical 11 to 14 cents on the dollar that they traditionally get, you know, across the country based on different commodities, they're sure to get a fair price for their produce. They know that it's going to be purchased, all of it, each week, and they know where it's going. So we found a very good way to collaborate with them so far.
All right. Well, what about a good way to start, as Spencer says? And Spencer, I assume you're asking on your own behalf.
Well, yes. I work with the food bank, and I often wonder why we don't have more initiatives like this, so as opposed to just distributing food directly to them, possibly having garden plots to help them sustainably grow their own food and sort of lessen what they need to get from other resources. So, okay. I appreciate that you're discussing this. This is very interesting for me.
All right. Brent, you might be touching on some other points that you've already made, or Michael, but go ahead and try to address his startup questions.
Michael, did you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Sure. In terms of startup, we lucked out. We didn't even know about this farm when we decided to become a nonprofit. We approached the city of Lynchburg and asked the different departments and found out that the Redevelopment and Housing Authority had literally several hundred vacant lots throughout the city. So we started going to each of them, figuring out which ones had a good aspect, big enough size, you know, all the different characteristics to where they might be suitable for community gardens. And we put in a request, a bid, basically asking that we could purchase five lots in the city. And then after that is when we found the farm, and the landowners were kind enough to also agree to sell that to us as well. But at the beginning, we were starting very small, just thinking of how can we create these pocket community gardens and different inner-city neighborhoods that really could benefit not only from the food, but from that intergenerational connections that take place when you have children gardening alongside with people their grandparents' age or neighbors that might not normally meet each other coming together at a garden.
That's great. Spencer, thank you so much for your call from Virginia Beach. We now move all the way to Lynchburg. Good morning, Maurice. How are you this morning?
Yes, hi. Are you there?
Yes, and you're on the air.
Oh, great. Thank you. I'm calling from Lynchburg, and thanks for having me on the air. I have a question about keeping the organic produce that we grow truly organic and not introducing more chemicals to the table by, you know, one of the problems we have in the city is the deer. You'll plant something, and a few weeks later, it'll get eaten up by deer. So you go out and purchase something like a deer repellent, and you're introducing a chemical or something that would keep pests away from your produce, but then you're thinking that you're growing something wholesome to feed your family, and yet you're introducing chemicals. What would be the best way to keep our produce truly organic and safe from any chemicals?
Maurice, thank you for that question. And whether it's Michael or Brent who answers, we'll have about 60 seconds or so until we take our break. But what are some ways to bridge that gap? I understand his concern, and it's not just deer. Sometimes it's many other things you're trying to combat with your gardens.
Well, growing truly organically is very difficult, especially in the Southeast where we have a humid and warm climate. You know, we have a variety of pests and funguses and things like that. You know, organic produce is usually grown with organic pesticides and herbicides. And so I would make sure you do your due diligence and research those and see what they are and see how comfortable you are with those. As far as deer fences work great. There are plenty of dogs at the SPCA that love to chase deer, and they love a good home. And so that's another good option if you want to keep it organic.
Yeah, thanks so much. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. That will be continued. But first, this message that next week, it's all about cancer treatments and how to personalize your relationship with your doctor. Stay with us. We'll be back with more in just a moment. And welcome back. Today we're talking about bringing the farm into the city. Our guests are both speakers at the upcoming Urban Agriculture Summit in Lynchburg. That's happening in mid-April, the 15th and 16th. Check it out. Joining us are Michael Van Ness, a founder and executive director of Lynchburg Grows, Brent Cochran, founder of Leap for Local Food. You can find out more about their organizations by going to lynchburggrows.org and leapforlocalfood.org. I want to start with Brent, because you were making some points around how to get around that issue of organic and not organic. You gave some great pointers. Are there some more as well that people can utilize with their gardens so they don't become tempted to use pesticides and other introduce non-organic things to their gardens?
Well, you know, and I'll let Michael weigh on this because they do a lot of growing. You know, it is difficult to grow things organically. You do have to take a few extra steps. As I was saying, you know, there are organic pesticides and herbicides that are commonly used in organic production. It's also looking at things of how you're interplanting crops, crop rotation. That can get difficult on smaller plots versus larger plots. So this is where I'll defer to Michael because they might be growing in smaller, more dense areas and can speak to that a little more.
Yeah, and I do agree that, you know, it is harder in this type of climate, especially, you know, fruit trees. It's going to be almost impossible to grow a really, the most beautiful Virginia apple organically. It's not going to look like what you would expect in the grocery store. Another thing that's important for people to remember is that just because you get a bottle and it says it's organic, it could still be very dangerous if it's not applied correctly. For example, pyrethrum is a very commonly used organic chemical, very strong at handling different problems. But however, it can cause brain damage. It's from the chrysanthemum flower, but if it's used inappropriately, it can do some of the same damage that lead might do to a child. So you can't just see it on the label and just apply liberal amounts without following directions.
Michael and Brent, are both of you 100% organic, 75% organic? What ratios are you using with your own gardens?
On our vegetables, we haven't used any synthetic chemicals, and gosh, I don't think ever since we've been here. We do use neem oil. We've had to use chrysanthemum or the pyrethrum. For the most part, we try and really make sure we have healthy soil and
what
healthy
about
conditions. And like Brent said, make sure that you're not planting the same thing in the same bed season after season.
What about you, Brent?
Oh, well, that would make the assumption that I have time to garden these days.
I made that assumption.
But I would say the most important thing is what Michael's saying is it really comes from the health of the soil. Crop interplanting, interspersing, and crop rotation is probably the most important thing that you can do every season to try and avoid using some of those even organic chemicals. And I would echo what he said. Read the label very carefully. Just because it says it's an organic pesticide or herbicide doesn't mean that you can just, you know, lick it off the plant. So use it sparingly as best you can. And reach out to other people that, like Michael and other people in your community in Roanoke City. I think the Roanoke Community Garden Association is a great resource for information about this stuff. Reach out to those folks and other growers and find out what they're doing and what's working for them.
Let's go now to
Do want organic produce or the best fresh quality. Don't trust the label. Don't think that just by going to the grocery store that that is organic. The studies show that over half of the fruits and over 30% of the vegetables have traces of herbicides and pesticides, even with that sticker. And so go to your farmer's market. Ask the farmers what practices they use on their field. You know, come to Lynchburg Grows Buyer CSA, ask us how we do it. But I'm more into transparent farming is what I call it, as opposed to just putting a label and saying this is organic, trust it.
That's a great reason to resort to your local farmers for those things that matter. And we're going to turn now to Virginia Beach, where we have a call from Laura. Laura, good morning to you. Hi.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I work with a company that's interested in starting a community garden with some local resources, but in my experience, gardening can be very expensive with very low yield for the first couple of seasons. I was wondering what the startup expenses are and what can you expect to be investing into getting one started?
Great. Thanks, Laura. It's kind of like being an art student. Art's fun, but the supplies are really costly.
I think, Laura, it just depends on, you know, what your costs are going to be. So, you know, you're going to have to purchase land or pay some sort of rent or lease. You know, the second thing is you are going to need some basic tools. You are going to need access to something to sort of till the ground, whether or not, and hopefully somebody can come in and do that for you. I mean, I would really try and focus on getting as much volunteer help and donations as you can in the beginning. But yes, in the beginning, it takes a while to build up your soil, especially if you're going to do raised beds like Michael suggests, which is a great idea. You know, that you could probably get your local Home Depot or Lowe's to donate some lumber for that. You could probably find somebody where you could get some compost donated for that possibly. So, you know, you kind of just have to shamelessly reach out to everybody and tell them what you're doing and see how much stuff you can get them to help with. But for the first period of time, there is going to be some cultivation of the you know, the first two seasons probably there's going to be some cultivation of the land before you really get things going.
That's great. Thank you so much for that call. I was looking at an article in Good Magazine, 5 Reasons Why Urban Farming is the Most Important Movement of Our Time. The reasons given here are, number one, it renews local economies. Number two, it's about the environmental stewardship. Three, there's more of a focus on local politics. Four, the one that seems obvious is health and nutrition. And finally, this is something that we talked about when we discussed time banking and other community-based services. It is a flowering of community interaction. Is there anything to that list that you might add? Anything else, Michael or Brent? Do you think those pretty much cover it?
No, I think those pretty much cover it.
Therapeutic?
Therapy, yes.
And healing things that people can do, even just on an individual basis.
It's great. There is nothing better than tilling your own soil and how great that feels when you're eating that apple that you have grown.
And in terms of children, what an incredible way to teach them responsibility, because they are caring for that plant. If they don't water it one day or several days, if the plant dies, they learn responsibility. So, and in our case, by having people work next to disabled individuals, especially young school children, we found that they learn empathy, something that kids aren't naturally born with, but by being next to somebody who you normally wouldn't be around, you eventually learn to put yourself in their shoes. And we've been dealing with bullying here in Lynchburg before. Nationwide, people have been talking about bullying, but in a proactive way.
Let's go now to Norfolk. We have a call from Bill, another person who is interested in starting a community garden. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi.
How are you?
Oh, fine, thanks.
You are on the air.
Thank you. Hi, we are starting a community garden in Chesapeake, Virginia, on Western Branch, over in Western Branch. 3012 Taylor Road is where we're buying that property. It's 5 acres under the power lines. Repco said, Dominion Power said, grow anything you want, just don't make your landscape stuff very high, but we can grow anything we want. We have 5 acres that we're starting the garden, and we're really looking forward to working with Cindy Wiskowitz in Portsmouth and Mike Andrzik in Chesapeake. They're both extension agents. With 3012 Taylor's, where it's going to be, we're about ready to close on that property. My family has owned 4245 Taylor Road, which is the old Riverside Dairy, for about 40 years. We have a school there.
Bill, let me ask you a question. When you say you're going to be the owners, is it a nonprofit? Is a group of you who will own it? Or are you privately purchasing the property?
I am privately purchasing it, but we have about 10 or 12 neighbors that have put the property. And what I want to, we don't know exactly what to do yet, but we want to open the property to anybody who would like to join us in the Chesapeake Arboretum. We're doing an application for that now. And we'd just love to have people participate. Now, I don't know exactly how to make it work, but we're studying it.
Oh, you definitely need to be talking to Michael and Brent.
Yeah, right. That's tremendous. I just heard some wonderful things. I love the raised garden with the aspect because that's the raised beds. That's what we're going to do. We want to be totally organic.
Go ahead.
Bill brought up a good point. Our first garden, when we recreated Paul's garden, it was Appalachian Power who actually donated the land, and they promised it would forever be spray-free, but they gave him the site next to his group home that would never be destroyed. And they have held to that promise for 10 years now.
That is great.
Well, the property has one house on it, but it's 5 acres of unused property under the power line. We just say, hey, we're going to do this. When I was a scout in Portsmouth years ago, we used to hike and camp on that property. Now it's right in the middle. Well, it's a mile down, half mile from the mall, from Chesapeake Square.
Is there any danger? I hate to say this since you're marching toward your closing, but is there any danger about power lines, Michael, Brent?
No, no. They said, I've talked to them about that. We have seen a beautiful setup, and the University of California did one under the power lines, and it's almost exactly the same size property that we have or that we're going to acquire, and it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And there must be 50 or 100 plots in that. People with, 10 by 10, 12 by 12 plots. You don't need a whole lot. And then when, we read the article that came out by Gemma Seda Walker when she talks about what's happening in South Norfolk. It's incredible. And how she, in the South Norfolk Harvest Share Community Garden, we're going to get with them and try to figure out what we're doing because we really need help.
Well, good luck with that. And good for you, Bill from Norfolk, for calling in. I'm going to call him Farmer Bill. That's a great project. And now we go back to Lynchburg to talk to Kevin. Good morning, Kevin. You're an extension agent. We've been talking about the wonderful, wonderful benefits of getting in touch with the Virginia Cooperative Extension. How are you?
I'm well. How are you all doing?
Just great.
Yes, I've heard the great plugs on extension. That's fantastic. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about, I'm excited to meet Brent at the Urban Ag Summit, and I work with Michael quite a lot with teaching youth and doing some great things over at Lynchburg Grows in the city, and it's always a great opportunity to educate, and that's what we do as extension agents, is to educate, whether it's water sustainability, composting, just growing something, getting your fingers dirty, getting your nails dirty, and what Lynchburg Grows has done is great. And the whole urban agriculture movement, which you mentioned earlier too, it's fantastic. You know, when people think about cities, they think of gray buildings and cement. But now with the whole greening of it, whether it be rooftop gardenings or backyard gardenings or, you know, beekeeping, it's such a fantastic movement that that I'm really excited to work with in Lynchburg and across that's moving around the state.
Thank you so much for that comment, Kevin. A pleasure to have you on the show, and I will put a plug into the website once again to find out about where your local extension agent might be located. Go to ext.vt.edu. Thanks a lot. In Roanoke, we have a call from Daniel. Good morning.
Thanks. I just wanted to bring attention to a community garden in downtown Roanoke, Virginia. It's at the Lawson Building. It's a redeveloped furniture factory that they apartment building now, and they have a community garden. It's done all by the tenants who live there. My wife and I used to live there for several years, and now my wife is actually the property manager. Had a great time doing it, a great place to meet people, and just thought it was a really neat idea. They're getting ready to start it up again this coming up Saturday, I think around 1:30.
Is it a rooftop garden, or is it a space right next to the building?
Yeah, it's right next to the building. It's raised beds. There's two smaller raised beds and one good-sized raised bed. We've done tomatoes, corn, beans, a lot of really different stuff.
Thank you so much for that plug. We appreciate it. And speaking
awesome.
Of plugs, Brent, if you could tell us a little bit more about the Urban Agriculture Summit coming up. Both you and Michael will be taking part. How can folks, first of all, do they have to do anything special to show up? Do they have to have a hoe in their hand? And do they need to be farmers to attend?
No, they definitely don't need to
be a farmer. They don't need a. We won't put them to work, not at this type of workshop. We do have a lot of workshops where we do have people hands-on make compost piles. But the agenda on this is a little bit different. It's really for people to learn from the stories and to see what's going on around the Commonwealth. And the reason why the summit took place, I'm one of the co-chairs along with Spencer Neal, and I will say Kevin Kam, our extension agent, has done a lot of my work for me. But in October of 2013, the General Assembly approved HJ 758, which was a resolution declaring October as Urban Agriculture Month. And it was three legislators from Central Virginia, Delegate Ben Klein, Delegate Kathy Byron, and Delegate Scott Garrett, who led this initiative on our behalf, and they created a bipartisan support. So we had people from both sides of the aisle almost unanimously approving this resolution, and there was so much interest and support from the October Urban Ag Month that we realized, why don't we, in April of every year, see if there's the same interest in having an urban agriculture summit so people can share their stories as to what's going on in the Commonwealth, and to educate Virginians as to the benefit and importance of urban agriculture programs to their local community.
That is great. And that is the Urban Agriculture Summit. It's going to be held in Lynchburg, April 15th and 16th.
And it's only $75.
And it's only $75. And let's turn
the meals. So
that's a bargain. Let's turn to Seely from Hanover County. Good morning, Seely. How are you?
Hi, fine. How are you today?
Great.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I'm a former school counselor, and I'm just really excited about everything I'm hearing on your program this morning. It just seems to me that there are so many ways you can expand this for inner-city kids, and I'm hoping that you'll bring this up at the summit. I'm wondering if you've thought about things like, you know, renovating a little old building in each of these urban centers and making it an educational center where you could offer kids classes, business skills, economics, you know, finance, let them get school credits, let them get their hands in the dirt and learn, you know, the dignity of having a job and earning a paycheck. I'm just thinking there are so many ramifications of this that could really turn around inner city populations. I wondered if you'd thought of it from an educational aspect.
And there are many community centers working on aiming this toward kids. I'm sure, Michael and Brent, you've run into this as well.
Yes, and that's another area where Virginia Cooperative Extension, which thank goodness for the Smith-Lever Act, the 100-year anniversary of extension is this year. But, you know, the things you're talking about, teaching kids how to, what a bank account is, how to balance a checkbook, things like that. Extension does that through programs such as the Reality Store. So there's many ways where, as you said, we can partner with neighborhood centers and bring in cooperative extension and other interested organizations and do this because the programs are out there.
Yes, it sounds like more than anything, you all just need some coordination and collaboration because if kids could actually earn school credits with some of these classes.
We're actually, Kevin, why he can't be with me today, he's meeting with the superintendent of the schools, and we're discussing a way that we can partner with the city school system, with another organization called Beacon of Hope, and Virginia State University, and Extension, of course, and we would create a pipeline for high school students so they can learn about agriculture. Those that are interested could go to a 2-year program and possibly even a 4-year program.
That's great. Well, thank you both for calling in, and you're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. We'll continue this discussion about urban farming in just a moment.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
And welcome back. Today we're talking about getting the produce closer to your table through urban farming. Our guests are Brent Cochran, founder of Leap for Local Food in Roanoke, and Michael Van Ness, a founder and executive director of Lynchburg Grows. They're both presenters at the upcoming Urban Agriculture Summit in Lynchburg this month. I want to share with you both a story about a friend who visited me from the West Coast, and he's a permaculturalist. I imagine they grow permaculturalists in the West Coast. And for those who don't know, I didn't know what it was back then. It's the development of agricultural ecosystems intended to be sustainable and self-sufficient. And so he introduced me to his science and his study, and he looked at my backyard, which is medium-sized. And you could hear the gears turning in his head. And he said, I could help you turn this into a real garden, a real farm. And he started visualizing that these could go here and these could go there. And it was such a wonderful thing to hear him describe how I could fully utilize my backyard, which I had never considered. And at an economic level, who doesn't want something to fall back on? He made it sound as if with the right approach that I could create another sort of mini economy for myself. Anyway, that was very exciting. And so it's really invigorating to hear this discussion. We might add that to the list. Besides therapy, there's also that economic advantage.
Absolutely.
We also, unless you have any more comments about that, I do want to turn to you guys to talk about sustainable farming. This is a really important outgrowth of what we're discussing. And I don't know if you want to go ahead and start with that, Michael, but let's just get a little bigger picture around sustainable agriculture.
I'm sorry, I'm having phone difficulties.
Oh, you are. Okay.
As Brent said, you know, sustainable agriculture, it really, it goes kind of heart in heart with urban agriculture. you know, there's so many important social, health, and nutrition, economic, and aesthetic reasons as to why we need farms that will, you know, last centuries instead of the decades as they used to last. But this might, I've been talking so much, and I need to plug in my phone. Brent can take over for a second.
Okay, yeah, then you can rejoin us.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's at the heart of what we do as an organization. It is so important to have local agriculture, sustainable agriculture. I mean, we live in southwestern Virginia, which most people would say is this bucolic area. You know, from Roanoke, you can drive from the heart of downtown in 10 minutes and you can be out in the country. And that countryside is only retained as long as it's sort of economically viable. And so, you know, a great way to make it economically viable is to put it into production. And we do have a fledgling local food economy here, and it is growing. But for, you know, many years, we've been telling local farmers that we weren't interested in what they were producing because we could get stuff from California in the grocery stores. And so we're starting, there's a population of people that are starting to engage in local agriculture, in urban agriculture. And that's a really beautiful thing to see because it's such a win-win-win situation. You know, as I said, I have too many irons in the fire anymore to garden. I used to, and I would love to, and I hope to get back to it one day. But, you know, I kind of gave it up when I was sort of spending a lot of time and energy on trying to grow stuff. And I work with these farmers who do it for a living, and they're so much better than I am. They produce this gorgeous, delicious, nutritious, and truly organic food. And I'm able to get it at my local market or through a CSA or at one of our local restaurants that you know, serves the food that they produce. And so I really appreciate that benefit because myself, I'm like most Americans, you know, we with a family and businesses and just not enough time to actually grow. I'm really thankful to have people that are doing this locally where I can literally go to one of our markets, our local markets, and pick up produce that was picked that morning or, you know, at the latest, the evening before, and get grass-fed meats and dairy products and everything that I could ever want. And I know that it nourishes me in a personal health way. I know that it's healthy for me in that way. I know that I'm supporting my local economy by purchasing from somebody that lives in the county that I reside in and keeping our dollars circulating locally. And I know that it has a lower environmental impact because these farmers are fantastic stewards of the land, you know, and so they're taking care of their land, and it also has a lower carbon footprint. They're just not transporting stuff, say, from California, which takes a lot more fuel to get the food to us.
So, Michael, I know, yes, you wanted to speak to sustainable farming.
Yes, and I will say that I've been working with farmers for 20 years in Virginia and grew up with them, of course, in the Shenandoah Valley. I've never met one farmer who wanted to purposely damage his land. I've never met one farmer who did not want to try and have his farm be sustainable so he could pass it down from one generation to the next. But as Brent was saying, there is something really nice about being able to buy food that you know is grown within your region or within 100 miles. And in our case, to know that the food that people are buying from us, for example, is grown in soil that was made from our grass clippings, which have never had poison put on them, grown from leaves and from horse manure from a Sweetbriar College and Randolph College, all mixed together, getting to a proper temperature. So we're actually helping to, in the case of the city's leaves, we save 2,000 tons of leaves from going to the landfill every year. And it produces incredible soil that then nourishes the food in the community.
That is significant. And we go now to Suffolk, where we have a call from Starlight. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I live in Suffolk. I just moved there last year, and I really love it. It's so beautiful, and we have a wonderful farmer's market. But I like to do a little backyard gardening, and I wanted to know if there are any resources for, you know, urban gardening or container gardening, like seed swaps or anything that, you know, exists here in the region that might be a resource for someone who doesn't, you know, have time, like, to attend a community garden or, you know, necessarily access to something on a large scale.
Yeah, something in between. You want that middle road. Great. Any tips, Brent or Michael?
I'll let Michael tackle this one.
Okay.
The call was really scratchy, so I didn't hear it all. But what I would recommend is, as I've been saying to everybody, contact Extension. If you want to also learn more about gardening, join the Master Gardeners Program or even the Virginia Natural Program, which is also through Extension. And if you're interested in more educational, seeing what's out there, there are listservs such as the Community's Food Listserv, which is national information sharing, and then Virginia even has their own Community Food Listserv. There's just so many numerous educational opportunities out there and resources available, more than you would think.
And we had an earlier call from Sheila from Richmond. She wanted to know about soil testing. I know you would refer her as well to the Extension Service. ext.vt.edu is the website address. And now let's turn to Virginia Beach at Suku Osco. Is it Osco or Osco? How do I pronounce Osco? Welcome to the program.
Yes, yes, my name is Osco, and I live in Virginia Beach, but I garden in Norfolk. And our garden's about six years old. It's a community garden that we started, three activists, Joe and George and I had started it, because we realized that the urban centers, a lot of people weren't able to get fresh produce, you know, at an affordable rate. And a lot of them, in order to get to a good grocery store with good produce, they'd have to travel so far. So we've been trying to teach people how to, you know, grow things sustainably and organically. And we've also been helping other gardens to open up. And now in Norfolk and Chesapeake and Portsmouth, we've got a series of people that are interested. There's a lot more interest in trying to get gardens started than people realize. And some people feel like they're in isolation, you know. And so last year we got together with a food bank, and we're trying to spread the word that if there's any excess produce in people's community gardens, to try to get it to the food bank. But the big hope was to try to get the community gardens to network and get a co-op together so that we could help the local farm market. Five Points Farm Market is right across the street from us, and they would be a great outlet for us to, you know, if we could go and sustain them with enough produce. And I'm just thrilled to hear about this, you know, urban farming summit. I'm not sure if I'd be able to go there, but there's a lot of things going on. And in Hampton, I know that a series of community gardens are gathering together to work with the school systems. And what's really neat about that is I think they're trying to close the loop that not only are the schools growing gardens, but they're trying to have a children's farm market so that they can see that economic loop, you know, completely closed.
And that's great. Seeley from...
growing kitchen farms and community gardens in all of the school systems, all of the schools that they are building. So
that's great. Seeley in Hanover County shared with us that concern about being able to pass farming on to kids. In just a few sentences, can I get an idea from you? Because I have this generalized idea of your community garden right there in Virginia Beach. I can picture it. But what I want to know is... we said that you were from Virginia Beach. So that's
yes. I that's live in Virginia Beach, but I have to garden in Norfolk because Norfolk is more conducive.
I got it. Okay. So give us the specifics in as short a bullet as you can of how many hours you put in, what you yield, what you're working with and growing.
We go for biodiversity, and we dedicate, for me, just one day, and that's Mondays. But the garden is open 24/7.
And what do you grow?
And we've grown, right now our fruits are all growing, so we've got figs, we've got raspberries, we've got blackberries, strawberries, Korean peach, and mulberries, and goji berries. We've got our herbs coming in, and we've got rosemary, and we've got thyme, we've got sage, we've got cilantro,
amazing,
lemon balm, and we also have our garlic and our collards and our kale are coming in. So
that's quite a yield. I just want to say
it's only a 75 by 175 foot garden, and we're trying to tell people that if they garden intensively by vertical gardening and doing permaculture and food foresting, that we're trying to experiment to, you know, do more mulching. Last year we learned our lesson. Our garden looked like a jungle. But,
well, I want to thank you so much for calling in with your experience with the Norfolk Garden, Atsuko. It's really appreciated, and that gave us a great window into what you're doing there. So thank you so much. We want to turn now to Richmond, where we have a call from Michael. Good morning. You're a beef farmer. Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Yeah. Can you hear us?
We're at a grass-fed beef operation down in Richmond County, Brookview Farm. My father-in-law started the farm about 30 years ago, and he originally was farming cattle in Columbia, South America, came back up here and realized that was the right way to do it, not to do all the feedlot stuff, and he's sort of ahead of the curve. Anyway, we've continued it on, and I just wanted to let you guys know that my uncle, who's a holistic management farmer in South Africa, is over here, and he's doing a tour lecturing through the U.S. out west and coming through Virginia, and he's doing a three-day holistic management workshop down on our farm, if anyone's got the interest, May 7th, 20th, 29th, and it's basically about, you know, getting right back down to the basics with livestock and just using the land without farm equipment and, you know, keeping everything minimal in terms of inputs. It's been highly successful, and it's holisticmanagement.org is their website. It's a wonderful workshop that we're going to be having at the end of May for anyone who might have any interest.
Great. Holisticmanagement.org. People can find out more about that. Thank you for that plug. And now we go to Lexington. Douglas, how are you this morning? Hi, Douglas. You're on the air.
Hello. I had some questions for your panelists there. As a builder and a mindful builder, I've been involved in some drinkable roof systems. And I'm wondering if you guys have ever come across issues related to copper chromium acetate in asphalt shingles and their concentration in rain barrel systems.
Boy, that's feeling like a Michael question. What do you think? Michael, are you with us?
If I do want to find a little bit more, all shingles sold in Virginia are what's called algae guard shingles. Therefore, they contain copper chromium acetate. And rain barrels have a tendency to bioconcentrate the polyaromatic hydrocarbons that are produced by the shingle as the water evaporates from the barrel or is consumed.
Is that from, so you said that's from the asphalt shingles?
Yes. It's predominantly asphalt shingles that these algae guard systems are used.
That's interesting. This is the first I've really heard of that, Douglas. That's interesting.
I think it's something that people need to look at. The United States government, when they build drinkable roofs, use stainless steel sheet. And metal roofing systems contain a fair bit of lead in their colorings. I want to just try to get it out there. It's something that I researched in 2006 extensively in order to produce drinkable roof systems. And I'm a bit concerned that we're bioconcentrating as we try and disconnect downspouts from municipal water systems.
Well, thank you so much for that. That really is something to think about. And I think you, Douglas, have managed to stump our panel. So we'll add that to our research list. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
As we march on out toward the end of the program, I just want to get from you, Brent, the future of urban farming. This has to be, through all of the reasons we discussed earlier, something that is only going to keep growing and growing.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think it goes along with the entire sustainable local food movement. I think there will be more people growing. You know, there are plenty of, Michael said, there are plenty of unused lots in places. And there's an interest in this. You know, we have new farmers sprouting up in the surrounding areas, even though they're not urban. They're very close by and will be, you know, will be connecting to the urban hub because that's where their market outlet is. And so I think that's going to continue to grow regardless of whether it's technically urban or just within the close-knit region. It is a growing trend, and that's a beautiful thing from our perspective. So we're excited about it.
Brent Cochran.
I'd like to say that if we're really going to be able to successfully incorporate urban farming and food production into our city's planning processes and redevelopment strategies for the future, which is essential, there are so many challenges.
Well, we're going to have to continue those challenges in another show. That's Michael Van Ness and also Brent Cochran. Thanks to you both for joining us to talk about urban farming. I'm May Lily Lee. Join us again for Virginia Conversations.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.